Well, what is going on, everybody? Welcome, welcome, everybody, into the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Show on the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Network. We were having a conversation earlier today. What is this thing called? Is it Overreaction Sports Network? Is it Overreaction Buffalo Sports Network? Is it Overreaction Buffalo?
I don't know, man. I'm out of breath from playing the air drums to that.
I like the OBN. I'm the OBN of Overreaction OBN. Buffalo Network.
OBN, it's OSN. I've got graphics for OSN.
Well, I thought we were like Overreaction Buffalo, and we were part of the Overreaction Sports Network.
I think that's what it's supposed to be. That's the overall.
That's what I thought.
The goal, the dream someday is effectively what it's supposed to be. But I still haven't. I've asked the question twice. Were you guys making fun of me? Because a lot of times I jam out to that intro song. So you guys making fun, or are you just having fun?
I've never seen you jam out to it, but I just got the fever. Rookie minicamp. I got the fever, baby.
I got the fever. The fever for more cowbell.
Yeah, then there's only rookie minicamp. There's only one thing that'll help it, and it's more cowbell.
It's more rookie minicamp and Chips Ahoy's cookies.
Oh, I missed you clowns.
Yeah, this is the first time the three of us have been together since somewhere around the draft. But welcome to everybody into the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Show. My name is Joe Miller. You can find me on Twitter at Joe Miller Wired. That over there is Jerry Ostrowski, and below him is John Fien if you're watching us live right now. But welcome to all of you that are also in the comments section, which includes my mom. So Bonnie Clark is back. She now has a college degree. She's a college. What's happening? College grad. So my mom.
What's up, Bonnie Clark?
Go ahead.
Goal.
So my mom is in the room along with Tracy Fichter, Richard Rush, all the usual suspects, Adam LaFaro, Scott Blakely, and some new folks as well. It's good to have all of you guys with us as always. So do us a favor, please like, please subscribe, whatever platform you are consuming this on right now, whether it's live with us right now on YouTube, Facebook, or Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, or in podcast form, please subscribe. Please tell a friend, hit the thumbs up button wherever you are. But excuse me, but yeah, it's good to have everybody. It's good to have you too. It's good to have the JX3 back, right? So the J's times three. That's the three of us together. I've got a margarita flowing. It's Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. So how was your guys' Mother's Day? Well, John, you're on an airplane all day long, so your Mother's Day was kind of not great.
I was on an airplane until I was running through the Atlanta airport like O.J. Simpson. I might have knocked a couple of moms down. Just a little forearm shiver there. It was Jerry O. I didn't do that.
Happy Mother's Day as you're going by. Happy Mother's Day.
Get left. Make a hole. Make it wide.
Exactly. That's a tripping penalty. But I made steaks and lobster for my mia esposa and honored her in that way. Also, I smoked cream cheese.
I have to say, before he goes on with this freaking nine course, I want to come back as Joe's wife.
I mean,
is there a lady that gets taken care of any better than Joe's wife? I mean,
I have it on the highest authority.
Oh, did we lose John?
Oh, we lost John. Can
outcook him like that.
We lost you. You have it on the highest authority that what?
Oh, that your wife, Beth, outcooks you easy.
You know what I made today, John? I fired up the Hasty Bake with some good hardwood charcoal, and I made Chevetta's chicken, my brother.
That is a callback and a shout out for many displaced.
And it was strong.
Ask me what I've eaten today. I had a $22 egg sandwich at the Atlanta airport. And now that I think about it, I haven't eaten anything since. That's why I'm a little bit loopy. That's why I'm here for the show.
Well,
I'm gonna pour some bourbon on this later, and then it's gonna be crazy.
Well, it's good to have. I gotta reel this in. It's good to have everybody here. We're gonna talk a couple different things. Obviously, we're gonna talk a little bit about the rookie mini camp to include a little bit. And I know you guys talked about it on Thursday, and that was a great show. I'm a fan. I could sit and listen to you guys talk for hours, but it is always good to get the opportunity to sit and talk to you guys as well. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk a little bit about AJ Smith. And why don't we kind of start right there, if that's all right with you guys. It was released today by GM Kyle Smith that his dad, AJ Smith, a former Buffalo Bill, who started as a scout with the Buffalo Bills. And I had it on Wikipedia here a second ago, started as a scout in Buffalo in 1986, finished his career in Buffalo as the director of pro personnel in 2000, and actually went and with John Butler when John Butler left to become the general manager for the San Diego Chargers left with John, but they announced Atlanta Falcons assistant general manager Kyle Smith and his family announced Sunday the passing of his father, longtime NFL executive and former San Diego Chargers general manager A.J. Smith at the age of 75. Smith passed away on Sunday, May 12th, surrounded by his loved ones after a seven-year battle with prostate cancer. He's survived by his wife, Susan, son, Kyle, daughter, Andrea, son-in-law, Noah, and three grandchildren. 35 years in the NFL, moving up through the ranks, and had a storied career in Buffalo. And I know, I believe, my understanding is both of you knew AJ, right? So I don't know if you guys want to take just a moment to maybe talk about AJ, some of his legacy in Buffalo, because he was here for, like, he was in the scouting department when the glory years of the Bills, right?
Right. So AJ was John Butler's right-hand man. I mean, that was his guy. That was his henchman. That was his guy, his confidant. And just a little history about these guys. They all came from the Pittsburgh Maulers, from the old USFL days. And John and AJ and them were with the Maulers. They came over. We're in the Buffalo scouting department. I still remember the day when AJ had that short stint as kind of interim GM. When John, I believe you were there, we were working out at the facility and John Butler walked out on the field and called us all up around him and basically told us, "Hey guys, I've been let go. I'm no longer the GM." I mean, it was that simple. I mean, it what's so crazy about it was the way that players get released. It was the same exact thing, except John was the one telling us that he was released, right?
Right.
And then AJ took over for a while, but we kind of knew that AJ would eventually end up in San Diego because of his relationship. And then obviously John passed away from cancer. AJ took over and was the all-time winningest general manager in Chargers history. So an old school, came up through scouting, came up the, you know, through the ranks, and worked his way up to becoming a GM in the NFL. So, you know, props to AJ. He was always good to me. I enjoyed him. And, you know, it sucks that he's gone, but it also is hard for me because it's the same way that my father passed away as well, battling prostate cancer for so long. So, you know, prayers and everything to his family, and, you know, we're thinking of him.
Yeah, I'll just echo that old school part. I mean, he was a great guy. That he'd come up to you at practice, you know, kind of bump into you a little bit and ask you how it's going, you know, in a real kind of fatherly kind of way where he really cared. It wasn't just a casual comment. And you knew that when John said he was leaving, that he'd be going with him. I mean, they were thick as thieves, you know, printed from the same guy. You know, it was nice to be in Buffalo at that time because we were kind of soaked and draped in these old school characters, you know, as much as you could be. The NFL continues to evolve, right? But legends and things like that, we can look back and say, you know, Marv Levy, John Butler, A.J. Smith. I mean, the players that we played with. And it was a real honor to know the guy, and my condolences out to his family.
Well, the third member of that trio was Dwight Adams. And a lot of people don't remember Dwight. Dwight was from Arkansas. He was an old school guy, was a college football coach at one time. Dwight was the guy who was personally responsible for getting me to the Bills. I remember I was released by Kansas City. I was doing some work with the football team as a student assistant. And he came in after the season was over and said, "Hey, you know, we want you to come up to Buffalo." They tried to sign me. I went to Atlanta, which was an absolutely stupid decision. And then I came back to Tulsa, and I'm there, and my offensive line coach that I played for, who I was helping, he comes in and says, "Hey, somebody wants to see you in my office." And I walk in, it's Dwight Adams. And he looks at me, he goes, "I thought I told your dumbass to come to Buffalo." I was like, "Hey, man,
I got this agent." He was a character. That dude is a character.
"I got this agent." He's like, yeah, I get it. He goes, "Well, just understand this." He goes, "We're getting ready to make a move probably on the roster. We're going to have a practice squad spot open. I want you to have it." He goes, "So just hang tight. Give me a couple weeks and let me work on this." And sure as hell, he calls, and 2 weeks later, I was actually in Utah in Salt Lake City visiting my wife, my girlfriend at the time, now my wife, who was working for Kappa as a chapter consultant. And I flew home on Sunday, flew out on Tuesday, took a physical Wednesday, and I'm standing in practice next to Fina looking around like, what the hell am I doing? And was there for 10 years. So
I'm just shocked that you passed that physical. Hey, they didn't take a blood test for bourbon, right?
Yeah, so I did pass the physical. But no, I mean, between John Butler and A.J. Smith and Dwight Adams, most of the credit of those big-time runs, besides Bill Polian, and those guys worked with Bill when he was there, those guys were responsible for it.
It's funny, John said that it was a foregone conclusion, expected that he was going to follow Jerry Butler. I remember, obviously, being a fan John back Butler. Then. John Butler, my bad. Yeah, John Butler, Jerry Butler, former wide receiver for the Buffalo Bills in the 80s. Yeah. I was a member of the Jerry Butler fan club when I was a little kid. Sorry about that. Thank you for correcting me. By the way, I do that a lot, so you guys are welcome to correct me anytime I misspeak on a name. It happens often. Chris Jenke will tell
you. There's no gibberish, Joe. No yeah. gibberish. Get to the point.
And hey, you're not allowed to do it to me, though. I don't want to correct
you. I can scat with the best of them. Anyway, when you talk about it being a foregone conclusion, I remember a lot of Bills fans back then, before we were called Bills Mafia, very confused that the Bills didn't keep him, that he did go, because right. then, as we all know, maybe not all of us, but as many people know, John Butler, who preceded came after Bill Polian, went on to the Chargers after getting fired from Buffalo, and then passed away there, and A.J. Smith became the GM of right. the San Diego Chargers. And there was a lot of Bills Mafia, there was Buffalo Bills fans back then, that were like, why didn't he stay? Why did we do nothing? So can either of you speak to maybe what happened there?
Yeah, I can give you a really easy answer to that. Ralph was a guy that held, I mean, as good as Ralph was to us, and Ralph was an awesome guy to play for, Ralph held grudges. Mm. He held grudges. And if you got on Ralph's bad side, that was it. Mm. And when that whole thing went down, they couldn't work the contract out and John moved on. AJ was kind of guilty by association. He was a John Butler guy. So it's not shocking that he moved on, because, you know, it was that whole kind of relationship with Ralph. And when Ralph was done with you, he was done with you.
Gotcha. You know, Jerry, it just lends itself to the old saying, you don't fall in love with players, right? Stay in right. love with your team. Same thing goes with coaches, general managers, right? You keep people on, you can't always tell what their motivations are. So you let John Butler go, you keep the rest of his crew. You know, you just got to wonder sometimes. It's best to bring in fresh new people. That's just what they do, and that's what they will always do.
That's what they do, and that's what they'll always do. And this time it was the worst possible thing that Ralph Wilson right. could have done, because it led inevitably to the 17-year drought. Like, it was the beginning. It was the domino that fell that caused.
Well, Ralph really tried to – I mean, Ralph was really trying to push down salaries. I mean, if you looked at some of the guys that became general managers while Ralph was still alive, I mean, I can't remember who was the guy that ended up being, was it Buddy Nix? Buddy Nix a GM for a while?
Buddy Nix came in after Donahoe.
Don't say it. Yeah. Don't say it out loud. Don't say the name out loud. Don't say
that name out loud.
So when I load this up later, if it says explicit content, I have to put yes now.
If you want us to have PTSD, please don't.
Wow, what a knucklehead.
You were saying.
But anyway, yeah, so that, you know, I think Buddy Nix, whatever. So he tried to stay within the family, but eventually, you know, moved on.
By the way, sidebar, and we'll get back to AJ Smith here in a second. Michael just puts in got Bledsoe. He was talking about Bledsoe. Did you guys happen to watch the Tom Brady roast? Bledsoe crushed it. He killed. And they, like, the jokes that they were throwing at Bledsoe too, which were amazing. But Bledsoe did such a good job in that roast. The one point where he said he was talking about Belichick, and he was like, you know, after my team didn't want me anymore, I had to, like, somebody wanted me after, like, my first team didn't, unlike Belichick. And then he was like, oh, just checking to make sure he wasn't standing behind me. It's like Bledsoe, yeah, he did such a good job. So I don't know if you guys watched the roast or not, but it was good. So
yeah, I saw most of it. And there was an interesting article that came out this week, of course, so many days after the roast, about how much tension was in that room.
Oh yeah,
between Belichick and Kraft and Brady kind of in the middle, and you know.
That was from Edelman. Edelman said that they were all kind of yucking it up, and then Kraft walked in, and it was like,
well, it was either a cathartic moment, and they can get over it, or are they going to go sharpen their axes and come after everybody?
I think they all got over it. I think it helped. I mean, I'm not saying that they're all besties now, but I think that there was a great deal of that, what you just said. Like, we're back in the room together for a good cause, because a lot of times a lot of that money goes to charity. I would imagine that they're better off.
I think the biggest point of that whole, the roast, and just kind of the way this whole Patriots thing came about, and how you're seeing it unfold after that dynasty or that run is over with, it shows you just how miserable really good teams can be.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, even though they're winning every week and they're winning seven, whatever, however many Super Bowls they won, they're just, it's miserable.
Can I get some of that misery for Buffalo?
Right, but you know,
just 1 year of misery, bro. Just 1 year.
But you understand what I'm saying.
The Lombardi. No, right, I do.
You understand what I'm saying.
The two dudes that lived for 7 years in Club Marv are now saying, hey, give me a little bit of Belichick.
If you're hoisting the Lombardi, I think, you know, those memories will last a little bit longer.
You think Belichick is putting up with Bruce Smith skipping training camp every single year? And Bruce is like, I'm good with it. Like, I don't know, man.
Have you seen Bruce play? Yeah. I've seen Bruce play.
He didn't skip one-on-one pass. He skipped by me pretty quick, like a vapor.
But here's the thing, though. I mean, here's the thing. You say this, right? You say all these things, and it's fine. But honestly, I mean, Belichick had experience with that with probably the biggest hard ass there was, which is Bill Parcells, and how they handled LT. I mean,
Terrell Owens.
Parcells is basically like, shut up and don't talk to him.
Yeah, he did the same thing with Terrell Owens. You got to wonder if Bruce Smith, if hypothetically speaking, if Bill Belichick is the head coach of the Bills during that run and that time when Bruce was here, and we'll just use Bruce as the example. Obviously, there was other guys that were probably not drama queens, but like there was some drama that surrounded them. Belichick shipped guys out. Right. I mean, they got to a point where they got to be headache-ish and long-ish in the tooth, and Belichick would just move on from them. Storied guys inside of the Patriots franchise. So you wonder how that would have all played out, but it's interesting nonetheless. Getting back to AJ Smith real quick, I've always wondered this question, and maybe the two of you can answer. What is a how's it described? 2 seconds. I'm going to get back to the notes. Director of pro personnel. So does that mean that he's in charge of the roster? Because how does that differ from what Brandon Bean is as a general manager?
I can answer that. There was two people. So you had AJ Smith, who was director of pro player personnel.
Yeah.
And then you had Dwight, who was the director of college player personnel.
Okay.
So basically, Dwight's responsibility are the collegiate players, the guys that had been in college and all that. AJ was scouting actual guys in the league plus guys that had been released.
Gotcha.
So you've got so many players. You can't have one person studying both things at the same time. So AJ's responsibility was players in the league, advanced scouting, and guys that had been released. Can we add guys that'll help our roster? And then Dwight was seniors coming out of college.
Gotcha.
And now, Jerry, there's a position for that in college now. So the Power Five teams especially, and all the conferences below that, they have to know every player in America in college, because if one of their kids goes in the portal and somebody else comes in the portal, say Jerry comes into the portal. So we can reach out immediately and say, Ostrowski, come play for the University of Arizona. If you spend a day or 3 days or a week trying to figure out if you want the guy, somebody's already there developing the relationship, has already reached out.
Because collegiate scouting has gotten, like John said, to the level of the pro deal, where they have rooms of guys that all they're doing is evaluating high school talent
all day long.
They know what their coaches want in a player, and they pre-scout these guys before they even, and then they bring a handful of names in the film to the coach. And then the coach watches them. So they've been vetted before they even get to the position coach on a team. Gotcha. That's how in detail this has gotten.
Gotcha. Yeah, especially when you get back past the three stars, right? Because there are kids that are developing out there, and you got to have, I mean, you just, one person and hardly a team can even consume the number of high school athletes that are out there. And kids now in 2026 year and 2027 year, you know, they're already being looked at. 2026 kids are getting offered already. So yeah. It's the same thing with the pros. I mean, obviously the scale is a little smaller, but you've got to know everybody on every team that you play.
Right, right. I want to stick with this for at least one more question. I apologize. Maybe we'll save it for another show. I was going to ask, and if you want to jump on it, you can. And if you both say pass, that's fine too. Being there for the transition, and I've talked a lot with John just about the culture shift when Butler left and the old guard was gone, and we're moving on from what used to be, and we're going on to the new thing, which is TD. I'll just call him TD for John's sake. I was going to ask a question, the looming nature of it, right? So it's off season. I think you guys are both on the team. Is there text messages? Are there phone calls going back and forth? Is it very much of what's going to happen? I don't even know what the off season culture is back then compared to today's technology, as far as text messages and DMs on Twitter and whatever. But yeah, you guys can both pass. We can talk about that another day if you want.
I'll pass on that.
Jerry, same.
I'll just say no. I'll take it real quick. I'll just say, you know, we weren't as interconnected back then as everybody is now, and there's more coach and player now, and it would have been really hard to drum up any information on GW or TD just to have a reaction. So I think it was nice in that day and age, right? I didn't have to have an assumption. I just show up and see what the hell happened.
Right.
And you gotta understand, I mean, when we were in the league was kind of the inception time period of the internet. And I mean, I think I bought my first computer from, you know, the Bills had an IT guy and was selling Dell computers and bought a laptop from them at a cheaper price. I mean, I think that was my first computer I ever bought. So yeah, I mean, it was the land of flip phones and and all that back then. So it wasn't quite what it is today.
Yep, very good. So moving into good conversation just around AJ Smith and just his legacy, which is strong and storied here in Buffalo. Just condolences out to his family, prayers out to his family as far as that goes. And so hopefully he's onto greener pastures up in heaven somewhere. But as it pertains to rookie minicamp. So rookie minicamp is 1 or 2 days old. We got our first look of Keon Coleman and all the guys, primarily Keon Coleman, it seemed like, and even more probably Frank Gore Jr. than Ray Davis, as far as that goes. Like, it seemed like there was more video that I saw of him on the web. First glances, first thoughts of what you guys saw, or maybe what you heard from the pressers, from anybody, as far as it pertains to the rookies?
I think the biggest thing for me was just how much individual time position coaches were spending with the guys that obviously are going to be, you know, rookies that they're going to count on. For instance, they said that Joe Brady was basically by Coleman's side the entire practice when he was doing work. Same thing with Cole Bishop. I believe it was, the coach was Coach Harris. I believe, if I'm wrong on that, please correct me, but right there with him all the time, talking about how both players talked about in their press conference, how many Zoom meetings they had before rookie mini camp, how they're utilizing Zoom and all that. So, you know, Keon made a comment, and by the way, I think Keon Coleman is very, very mature for his age. I think he's very mature for his age. He handles press conferences extremely well. His answers are thorough and very, very good, very informative. But he made a comment in the press conference. He made two. One about how they said, "Well, is the playbook a lot like a Florida State?" He said, "No, it was a lot like Michigan State."
I heard that, yep.
Which I can understand, because Florida State, they run more of that, I don't want to say gimmicky, but their past stuff is more built in. Norvell is a Gus Malzahn disciple. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what he's running is a lot like what Malzahn ran at Auburn and runs at UCF. Malzahn was an OC at Tulsa for a little bit, as was Norvell, before he went with Graham to Arizona State. So I thought that was interesting. And the other thing he said was the terminology is different. I'm trying to learn the terminology, but the concepts are basically the same, which I think is a pretty interesting comment listening to that from Keon Coleman.
I would add a little bit to that, Jerry, in that the way he ended up getting there was pretty good. When he was being interviewed, he's getting another layer of questioning, and he really showed the capacity to deliver, you know, the evolution of the question. So he was pushed and he responded, and I really enjoyed that. I thought Cole Bishop's interview was really good, you know, talking about, well, we run more quarters here, and yep. All the guys, and it's kind of a window dressing, you know, hit the plug button, say the right thing. But it's good to have them do that, and it's great for our fan base. I want to see from the players. I ate it up. I spent, you know, a couple hours today just listening to them because I want to like them. I want to understand that they understand what they're seeing. But so much of what they're doing right now is getting back into football movements, right? So much time preparing for the combine, which, by the way, is an entire business in and of itself.
Yeah.
But just getting back into football movement. And I thought they all handled themselves really well.
Clearly, we are 20-something years removed, maybe 30 years removed from the time that you guys went through your final season as a junior or a senior in college, then into like all of the draft prep and all of the, you know, poking and prodding and, you know, how many times can you jump and how high can you jump and how far can you jump and all that stuff and all the things that you do as a rookie. How we hear it talked about often. But how different is it being a rookie and going from college to the pros versus your first NFL offseason going into your second year where it's like, oh, I can go to Mexico.
You want to start that, John?
I didn't go to Mexico. I came back to Buffalo after the Super Bowl and I worked out there in the off season. I thought to myself, oh my God, it's May and I'm still freezing to death. I took a very different approach to it. I knew that I needed to develop. So I hung around Buffalo a lot. I spent my entire first, I think, three off seasons in Buffalo just, you know, going to the weight room and hanging around with Kurt Schultz in the afternoon and, you know, hitting the record store on Elmwood and, you know, having a great time going to Rochester, then going to New York City and, you know, seeing family and friends. But I was there 4 days a week, five, I guess.
Yeah, I was the same way. I mean, when we were there, we talked about this a couple shows ago, this whole idea of your own trainer and going off site to train was foreign to us. This was the when, you know, like, for instance, we talked about when the Kent Holes and the Daryl Talleys and those guys would have their trucks packed up. And when the exit meeting was over, they got in their truck and started driving home. Right.
Right. Right.
It was the time when Jimmy Johnson came in, brought that college mentality. I want everybody here in the off season. And, you know, you're trying to make a squad. So you're trying to make an impression. But I did the same thing as John, spent my first probably 3 to 5 years in Buffalo in the off season. It was very, very, it was good for me to do that. You know, there's a lot of advantages to doing that, but, you know, obviously things have changed. But, you know, the difference with these guys is that I do believe that there's so much more information. There's so much more science. There's so much more that they can do preparation wise in the off season. It doesn't seem like they have a ton of time from the end of the season to when they start back at Buffalo again.
Right, right.
But they've really got things down to step by step, a science, like I said earlier. They're able to go in and get stuff handled. And, you know, I was really, like I said, I was really, really impressed. You know, Bishop was really impressive. And they asked him, like, are you studying the guys that, you know, before you that came in? Are you studying them to see how they're doing? He's like, man, I ain't got time to study them. I'll do that later. I'm still trying. I'm trying to learn this playbook. I'm trying to learn where to be, where they want me to be, when I'm supposed to be there, right?
Right, right.
And that's how Coleman was. The thing about Coleman I enjoyed was, you know, obviously he loves football. He's a competitor. I thought it was cool. He talked about Brady, a couple of Louisiana boys. There's a bond there with that whole Louisiana thing. So, yeah, I mean, I was impressed by those guys.
That's super, super good. John, anything to add?
You know, that there are
having a little trouble with your data. Your internet signal. Do we lose John altogether?
I don't know, but that's a good picture that we got him in a still shot.
There are more resources now, and the delivery of the resources is so much better between nutrition, Zoom, any kind of meeting you want to run. It's so much easier to do. It made more sense.
We're going to start a GoFundMe for John's internet service.
Right, right. Now you know why we got to get to 1,000. Now you got to know why we got to get
full bars, bro. I got full bars.
We got to afford to buy Fiend a new internet.
You can watch the tape back. You if you'd like to.
But one thing that Joe talked about, and it's obvious he's going to be the camp hero.
Yeah.
I think Frank Gore Jr. is going to be the camp hero this year. He is the guy that seems like media and people have grasped onto because of his, you know, his father's past in Buffalo and all that. Talked about how him and his dad said he hopes this is where he ends up in Buffalo. So obviously
legacy matters, doesn't it? What is it about legacy seems to matter in the NFL?
It does, but it doesn't, man. I mean, when it comes down to is, can you produce? You got to be able to play.
For sure. But legacy,
hope legacy matters. I mean, I got a couple kids you can take up there and hang out and make paychecks.
and wear
a number and whatever. I mean, when it comes to, you know, those things are fun and they're great. And we talked about Jeremiah Trotter Jr. with the Eagles and that whole thing. But at the end of the day, you got to be able to play, man. If you can't play, you're not going to be on the team. It's that simple.
Yeah. There is a benefit to giving a guy a chance who has had the tutelage that Junior's had. I mean, it's very clear, you know, there, you can prep a kid. Jerry can prep his kids in a way that other parents can't, that didn't play at the collegiate level or play at the pro level. And those are translatable messages because they can understand it. You can speak to your experience. Yeah. And I think kids really, you know, I think it's a wise move to bring somebody like that in. You know, there's a portion of them that's ready-made because of the way they were raised and what they've seen and what they've done.
The other thing I got out of this rookie mini camp, and I didn't think about this until I heard this when was watching some interviews and things like that. They talked about Ray Davis. We stay within the running back room. They talked about Ray Davis, and Bills fans were kind of maybe a little bit puzzled why they spent such a high round draft choice on a running back, right? But the comment made about Ray Davis was, and I thought this was interesting, the term they used more than once was he has big playability.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you start thinking about our running back room and who we have, and while Cooks can do some things, he's probably more of a workhorse back than he is a big playback. I thought that was interesting, you know. Ray Davis coming in, you know, making big plays, things like that. Shed a little light on that draft choice by Brandon Bean.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of meat, and we'll get the opportunity to talk more about this as we're getting a little bit long in the show as far as that goes. Rookie minicamp, it's going to continue, I believe, through the rest of this week. So coming up on the Overreaction of Sports Network for you guys specifically, Tuesday, Bick Carucci is going to be joining you guys. I will not be there. So I hope both of you can join. John's wincing already.
I got spring football in high school. I got a kid in the other room who's about 6'5", 255 pounds, got offers from Duke, Arizona, the Ivies. And I'm out there on the field making sure that he's a ready-made guy like Frank Gore Jr. So as much as I really hate coaching, I'm committed to helping out as often as I can. So Jerry O and Vic Carucci, you know what? You ought to put a ring in for that, Jerry O. I could see the two of you going to blows.
No, why would I go? I've done multiple interviews with
Vic. I'm just saying, back in the day at One Bills Drive in the locker room, I think you and Vic Carucci might have put the gloves on a couple times.
We never put the gloves on. No.
Revisionist history.
I've always enjoyed Vic.
That's funny. But Tuesday we got on the beat. We've got Vic Carucci, as you just heard, and apparently it's going to be Jerry. I'm going to be traveling. John's going to be with coaching on the sidelines with his son, Roman Fina, and then Jerry will be with Vic. And then Thursday, my I'll be available Thursday. I don't know. Not that we're doing roll call here, but we'll get a probably pretty good locked in conversation around the rest of Bills rookie minicamp. Before we get out of here, real quick, what I would like to do is talk briefly, if I can, about if it'll pull up, Buff on Weck. So you've seen myself, John, and Jerry wear these overreaction t-shirts, as well as I have an overreaction hoodie. And if you are interested in any of those, I've got a short read here for you. All right, Bills fans, listen up. Are you looking for a fresh way to show out for your teams, for the teams that we love? Look no further than Buff on Weck, your ultimate destination for Buffalo-themed gear. Whether you bleed blue and red zebra stripes for the Bills, retro royal for the Sabres, or rep any of Buffalo's other legendary sports franchises, they've got the perfect tees for you. Dive into the action at buffonweck.com and make sure you give them a follow on Instagram, X, Facebook, all Buff on Weck. Buff on Weck, tasty merch with a Buffalo bias. And if you click out of the overreaction stuff, by the way, you can only find our stuff by clicking overreaction. They have a ton of gear. So they just got a whole bunch of stuff. But wanted to give a quick shout out to Buff on Weck, who is right now providing the merch for Overreaction Buffalo. So yeah, super duper appreciate those guys. Now, with that, before I get us out of here, somebody said earlier there was too much useless banter. This is
I think it was yapping was the
This is the first time the three of us have been together in a couple of weeks, and I think what maybe gets lost is the three of us are buds. Like, this is the first time the three of us have had a chance to like get together and like talk, like, and kind of just be bros together. So if you don't like it, there's plenty of shows out there that probably don't have useless banter, right? Or yapping
is too much useless yapping.
Too much useless yapping. So
hey, yeah. It happens, man. It happens.
I've heard
it
probably
will continue to happen.
Yeah,
it's okay.
It will continue to happen. The hardest part is keeping the show inside of that 38-minute mark, which we are about to broach right now. But any final thoughts before I get us out of here?
Yeah, final thoughts. We just had a question from Maggie. Any show about the schedule? Yes, Wednesday we're going to do a special instant reaction show about the schedule release. I'm sure you'll all know the schedule before we have the show because they'll be leaking it during the day.
Yeah.
But we will do that. We got Vic on Tuesday. Big O, we'll do something on Thursday.
Yep.
And as we roll into summertime.
Yep. John, anything from you?
I got nothing.
Awesome. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning into the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Show on the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Network. That's for you, John. Appreciate every single one of you. Please do us a favor before you get out of here. Please hit the like button. Please subscribe. Stick around and pay attention to all the things that we're doing. We're going to be bringing you content through all of the offseason. And then, as Jerry has said, when the season comes, we're going to be doing shows 5 days a week, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday on YouTube, which will drop as pods on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and maybe some extra stuff in there as well. But for me, for John, for Jerry, for all of us here at the network, we appreciate you guys. Love you. Go Bills.
Go Bills. Go Bills.